Podshow is pleased to bring you the following killer content direct from the all-new feature-rich podshow.com. Get it, play it, dig it.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 85. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's starting to warm up here in the land of Chicago, thank God.
It's happening.
What's happening?
It's happening. It's changing. Spring is just trying to push its way through.
It is.
It's starting to come, and the sun is coming up earlier, and we're about to change the clocks
here. It's still freaking cold, though, here. But, you know, Easter's really early this year.
It is.
And last year, they had all of the homosexuals descended upon the White House lawn.
They did, for the egg roll.
For the big egg roll. For the egg roll. With the six, you get the egg roll for free.
Egg roll free.
But now, family pride, I think this is going to be an annual thing, because they're again in 2007 and they started this last year, and now Family Pride wants more people to come out. So if you have friends, or if you're listening to the show and you're in the Virginia DC area, they really want people to go. The event is on April 9th on the South Lawn of the White House, and it's not a gay event.
No.
I mean, it's just for families to, you know, to do the
White House tradition.
It's a White
every
House
year,
tradition.
They do
right.
The egg roll with the families.
But now they're showing up with hundreds of gay same-sex parents, and I think it's great too. And so I hope that you know, last year they had about 100. I think if they could double that number this year, that would be brilliant. So April 9th, check it out to go to the big White House.
And not to defend that idiot in the big white box, but they did actually make some nice remarks about the event last year. And, you know, Laura Bush said some nice things. So it wasn't, you know, if we can change them a little bit at a time, or we can inch, you know, my Japanese proverb, it takes grains of sand to make a mountain.
Yep.
So little by little,
I know
if we
that
can
because
do what
of
we
you.
Can do. Yay.
I know so many things because
Yay.
Of you, Peter.
And I.
You know, but I maybe Mary Cheney will come out this year with her
Ooh.
Little belly and,
oh,
and
that would be
a part of the
well,
South Lawn.
Oh, well, she won't be next year.
No. She won't be in
if
the White
we
House.
Have anything
Thank
to do with
God.
It.
Thank God.
But she may just go out to the white to the lawn and do it.
Oh, but you know, she's probably all verklempt because her dad had the assassination attempt, you know?
Isn't that crazy?
No. I think Vice President Cheney being in Afghanistan is crazy, because I can't believe that these bombs didn't drop right on his head. I mean, you know,
my point was gonna be, isn't that crazy? It wasn't successful, but
oh, well, yeah. I mean, be careful what you say, because Bill Maher, you know, is like shit creek, because he mentioned that more lives would be saved had the attempt been more. I think the gist of what he said was that if the assassination had happened,
right.
If Dick Cheney did not exist, not really that he was killed, but if he right. didn't exist, more lives would be saved because the war is perpetuated and we're losing so many people day by day by day by day by week
truly.
By month in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so anyhow, but he's holding his feet to the fire.
Yeah, he's getting in that dangerous
But he really
territory.
Didn't say anything bad. He really didn't. I mean, he this is what he does. You know, he talks, and he wasn't really saying it to incite anything. He was just basically saying, you could say that about any commander in chief. You could say that about any colonel
right.
or anyone leading an army, that if they fell to the wayside, probably the army would retreat
right.
and therefore lives would be saved. Right. That was all he was saying. But
there was a lot of tongue in cheekness going on there, I have to say.
Yeah.
So in Chicago tomorrow, the Scissor Sisters are coming.
Oh.
And I will have a lot of dish on that, I'm sure.
Feel like dancing.
I am so excited. I'm so excited to see Jake Shears in the flesh. He's just delightful. He's delightful. I don't really care for the venue very much. Have you ever seen a show at the Riv?
I don't know. Yes. Don't know. Sean Colvin.
Oh, that's right.
I think I work out to them.
Amy's just going to sing for the rest of the show.
Dancing here today. I like that they use the sounds of lasers and
lasers,
stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like my Dolly Parton Baby I'm Burning pink vinyl album that I have.
I love that.
Has that. The little like kind of laser sound. And they use that, the Scissor Sisters.
Yes.
Which I like.
The little digital effectoids that like.
And their videos that like have the wavy, like,
they're
it's so 1970s.
And,
I love it.
It's very Love Child, like quick camera cuts. Very laughing cuts.
I love that dancing song.
Yeah, really? Not one of my favorites.
Oh,
I like their slower songs.
It's so disco-y to me. It's just so circa 1976, which was the heyday of when I was gayest, folks. I didn't know it, but...
Oh, I was yet... I guess it depends in what part of 76, but I was probably a zygote at that point.
Oh,
I was just swimming around inside of...
I was... Well, maybe 78, I should say. 78
okay,
or 79.
Okay, I was alive then.
Because I was just dancing my tail off to, at the time, like... The Village People made a movie called Can't Stop the Music.
Oh, yes. And that tragic
Do the Shake, Do the Milkshake. Like, these songs were like, you can't stop the music.
Oh,
I mean, I had it all. Plus, we had like the Diana Ross album. We had oh, yeah, the Bee Gees.
Bee Gees, I just.
We had, you know, the Barbara White album, you know, the Guilty album. And
Saturday Night Fever. We had the 8-track.
Saturday Night Fever.
I used to dance on the hump
well,
in the back
and
of the
also,
car.
You know, the big thing at that time was the. Thank God It's Friday.
Oh.
With Donna Summer having her big
moment
the
where
end.
She sneaks in the club and then, yeah.
And this was the moment in time when I was falling in love with all my babysitters who took me to see Xanadu. And this is a really long story, which I will one day do a cabaret show on. But you know what? I have to tell you the funniest thing is that
I
have said for years that I wanted to do Xanadu on stage. And back when I was doing Xena, like the director of Xena, we were like, we should do Xanadu on stage because I wanted to be Olivia Newton-John and I figured it'd be a good excuse to learn how to roller skate before I die and, you know, bring back the leg warmer. And, you know,
it's back.
This is what I'm saying. I mean, I have totally missed the mark and yet had the vision. It's just awful.
You didn't get in Starlight? You should have tried for Starlight.
Oh, no. Starlight's just a tragic insurance accident waiting to happen. But anyhow, so I'm talking about this during Execution of Justice, you know, about four months ago, right when we started it. And it was so funny because Gary Griffin, our director, he overheard me talking about, you know, he's the big musical theater guy, Color Purple director and Apple Tree and all that. And he was like, well, I don't know why you'd want to do that. And I was like, well, you know, somebody already did this kind of like Xanadu live thing. And he was like, yeah, but I just don't know why you'd want to do that and not have good material. Well, lo and behold, they are doing it. Xanadu is being done as a musical.
Ooh.
It is cast. It has been being workshopped. You would think that I knew this, but I really didn't know this.
It's not in the performing.
No, and it's going to be on Broadway, and it's going to open June 26th in time for Gay Pride in New York.
Holy shit.
And it was supposed to star Jane Krakowski.
Yeah, from
Starlight Express actually, and Ally McBeal, and I don't know what show she's on. She was on some television show recently, but anyhow, but she's not doing it. They've got this new gal doing it, and I am just, I'm beclipped. But if it comes to Chicago,
well,
I want to be in it or I want to produce it. But you know, I did, I was like, maybe Gary Griffin will listen to me next time and let me produce a new show of his, you know,
Do you know anything about the book or who wrote any of it?
No, I don't. I mean, probably one Google search. I really just, I've officially read about it today. I kind of heard something about it about 2 weeks ago and I thought, no, it has to be what the old, like kind of campy thing they did in San Francisco right after I did Xena Live. I really think that they just kind of stole the idea and did the Xanadu Live. And
just because they rhymed or sort of looked alike.
I don't know. They were both exes. I don't know. Just kind of similar. But yeah, this is what I know. So I'm sure we'll have more dish on it and you'll Google here later on. But I mean, it's definitely all set up. They're, you know, they've got the people in place and they've pushed back the date and I think they're doing an out of town tryout before they go to New York. But it's happening.
I can't even imagine. Well,
Xanadu the musical, which it is a musical.
Right,
it sounds redundant.
Exactly.
Why don't you just Xanadu on stage?
Because the youngins don't know anything about it. So
it's a horrible movie.
They would think it was like Xenu and it would be all Scientology and all that craziness.
I love Oh, speaking of which, can I tell you a funny story that we talked about early in the week? I'm totally gossiping, but you know,
we like
Will from Steppenwolf, when he got us our tickets for Sandra, you know, I emailed him and said thanks the night before we went, and he was like, "Yeah, guys, I'm just trying to figure out who's going to take Sandra to the Kabbalah Center," and I like offered to take her to the Kabbalah Center, and I was like, I emailed him back. I still don't know if it was a joke or not. Like, was she really going to come into town? Because it was Purim, right?
Because the rabbis came. Did you not see them leaving as we were walking in? The rabbis were leaving the theater. She said between shows.
Yeah,
they were actually. I actually saw them.
Oh, I did not. You were standing outside smoking.
Yeah, well, I wasn't standing outside smoking.
Kelly was smoking.
Your girlfriend was standing outside smoking. Yeah. But we were hanging out with her, and Jonathan was like, "Aren't those what the?" And I was like, "What? The rabbi can't go see Sandra?" But
Sandra Bernhardt.
But it was just very interesting that.
Well, what is it? Do you know what the holiday was?
I am not of that faith.
Yeah, if somebody knows what it is, it was Purim or something. She kept saying Purim.
Judy's the Jewish holiday of Purim from the Book of Esther. Purim is one of the most joyous and fun holidays on the Jewish calendar.
Oh.
It commemorates a time... No, I should stop that. It commemorates a time when Jewish people...
It's like Billy Crystal in The Princess Bride.
Happy on the wing. It commemorates a time when the Jewish people living in Persia were saved from extermination.
Oh, well,
that's delightful. So it's good.
Yeah.
It's in the biblical Book of Esther.
Oh.
And you thought Esther was just the woman down the block. She's actually a biblical... So yeah,
I thought she was on 227.
Ooh, with Marla Gibbs and her family. Don't you remember that little 227 is a comedy with
Jack
Marla Gibbs and her family? Oh, Jackie.
Jackie.
Ooh, Sandra.
Ooh, fun.
Love Ooh. Her. Well, speaking of high camp and high fun and high craziness,
we were split at birth, Peter Maverick.
We were. I
don't know how you stayed back in the womb as a zygote. You should come out with me.
Seriously, Jonathan went with us to the other night, and you and I were talking, and he was like, "I get it. I so get why you and Amy like do your thing."
Who else would know Sandra but you? I mean, Jack.
And he was like silent, and Kelly was silent on the other side of you. And he said,
"Actually,
I kept
they did talk. Shut up quite a bit."
They did, but he was like, "I totally get it. I totally get what's going on." He's like, "You're an oral top." I was like, "Ooh, that's dirty."
Yes, I am, and I was trained to be this way. That's what good debutante training will
good
do for you.
Training.
It will train you. Hey, speaking of the South,
ooh,
can I just tell a little news story that happened in my home hood? In Memphis, Tennessee. So I guess there was this, there was a teaser that aired during Sweeps Month in February, which kind of, you know, gives everybody, teases them to watch something. Well, you know, and they're always trying to make these stories really sensational or whatever. Well, the ABC and CW affiliates in Memphis said they were going to do this story on the news. And it was about a story. It was called Gays Taking Over. And it was about, in Memphis, Tennessee, a group of African-American women, lesbians, who preyed on other women. And they interviewed somebody who was a so-called gang expert on the show, who works for the local Memphis Sheriff's Department, and was talking about the fact that, you know, there was all this sexual harassment and violence in the gang community and in this community of women. And basically that there's this gang that lives in Memphis, or I mean, you know, that resides there, who is trying to make its victims gay. And I'm kind of like, so what does this gang action look like? I mean, this makes gangbang have a whole new meaning.
And let's just be clear. It's just women, right? So eat my box. What are they doing?
I don't know. But, you know, we've discussed, you know, for the past, we've discussed this a lot now. This was a story out by GLAAD. But honestly, this actually was a good thing, because GLAAD actually got in touch with them from the teaser and gave some resources to the GM of the stations and also to the news director. And they showed it to GLAAD before it aired. And, you know, they
gave some resources. Okay.
They gave resources on, you know, the fact that people can't make people gay, you know, psychological facts, you know. And so anyhow, the television station story, they actually did make some adjustments to their story, but they did stand behind it. But they did remove some of its offensive elements. They referred they cut the repeated references to calling it a lesbian gang.
They
removed the depiction of the fact that it was only white women that were being targeted by this African American women's gang. But anyhow, and definitely the anchor and the reporter said, you know, this made a bit of a statement before and during, saying it was not meant to disparage lesbians. It was acknowledged that the gay community expressed concern about the piece. And so anyhow.
So fluff aside, what's the root of the story, though?
Well, I mean, I guess the story is that these stories are still being made.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
You know, that are still being out there and they're being put into sweeps times.
So originally this Memphis television station, let me see if I got this right. They said, oh, we've got this great lesbian gang who's trying to convert people. And we're going to show
white
you a story
women,
about
a black,
it. A black
lesbian gang in Memphis. Woo! That's trying to, that what they do is they basically rape or have sex with white women to attack them to turn them gay.
So that was the original story.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's so and the original and the story that aired still was very homophobic and very sensational and was you know, about the praying aspects of our community. And you know, and it didn't use any facts. It didn't, you know, it there was not really any huge documentary evidence where you actually saw these women doing, you know what I'm saying?
It was just confessing or putting anything to it.
Correct.
See, it's just
So it's just, once again, this fear mongering type of world that we've come into that has been so, I think, let me just blame it. You know, I just really do. I blame this administration on a national level for continuing to think that fear are the stories. I don't remember
for
having
continuing to foster the idea.
Correct.
That fear,
is newsworthy.
Right. Absolutely.
And you know, when we've been saying for decades that, you know, why is the news always bad stuff? Why is it always bad stuff? But
if it ain't
really
bleeding,
truly,
it ain't leading.
But I also truly believe that something has changed in the past 8 years where, you know, we're so worried about the alerts and the orange and we're going to be preyed on and these people have a missile and these people have a nuclear warhead and these people are going to attack us and not on our land. Let's do it over there. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I don't know. And maybe this is the basis of all homophobia is fear. And the fact that, you know, the whole joke about lesbians getting toaster ovens and people wanting to convert people and that we have a gay agenda.
What's the fear? I think it's just plain and simple. It's the fear of the unknown. Most Americans know nothing about what's going on in Iraq other than what they see on the television.
Right.
And I'm sorry, that's not enough of a news source for me. So it's the fear of the unknown. It's the same thing with homosexuality. What do they see? They see us in movies as junkies.
Right.
They see us in movies as hookers, as selling our bodies for whatever we need to
or
do.
Or killers, or
some sort of deranged social outcast on the fringes of society. And I'm sorry, I'm one of the most motherfucking stable people you're ever going to meet in your life.
Yeah.
And you are too.
And I am too.
And there are these... There are these just these one or two examples that people just want to blow out of proportion. But with that said, let the straight media get confused about us. Let them get a little confused. Let them get mesmerized and twisted, because then the good people will come along and they'll shine even brighter.
Yeah, it's just one of those other... It's to me, though, what has to happen right now. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's true. We talked to Judy Shepard. I mean, we're a long time ago, and her just saying, like, the gay community is so apathetic these days. And you know,
well, why
maybe,
should we get motivated, though?
Well,
really?
Maybe
that's
we
her.
Should. Yeah. I mean, maybe we are apathetic, but I think that it still is going to take our straight allies and a lot of the stuff that's going on with the F word and all this. It's going to take people having to decide on which side of the line they're on.
Absolutely.
Because this shut up, this don't ask, don't tell mentality for our community is just not working, and it's breaking apart now. It feels like
it
really does. It feels like it's cracking open, like we're cracking open around this issue of sexual orientation in a really profound way.
Well, and I think the exact opposite. Blogging has taught us that blogging and podcasting have taught us that you don't have to fucking be PC anymore.
Yeah.
If I say it exactly like that, that you don't have to be PC. You don't have to. You don't have to choose one side or the other. You can choose your side. So while everybody's trying to make up their own mind and be as much of themselves as they can, the reality is there's starting to be this huge breakdown in how we like to order things. We like to divide things up. We like to separate things. We like to stratify how we think about it. So yeah, I mean, it's this weird thing. As much as people hate segregation, we also love segregation.
Right.
And the fors and the against, you know, this is the basic democracy. Are you with us? Are you against us? Are you in there? Are you out of there? That's a hard decision, because we've been telling people, no, be PC. And then they go from this PC thing to this explosion of I can be whatever I want. And now we're saying once again, no, you have to pick a side.
Right.
So when we as homosexuals can't even come together on a consensus, even loosely, because I think that's where the apathetic overtones come from, that we can't get our shit together. Some of us love marriage. Some of us hate marriage. Some of us do this. Some of us do that. While we're having our own internal battles, the world is looking at us like, oh,
I think that's okay, but I think that what really has got to happen, though, is that the straight community has got to decide some basic issues of, well, you know, they have to come out on a side of, you know, not calling people names in press conferences and, right.
And I think they will get there.
And we are getting there. I mean, it is happening. It's not happening fast enough, but it's happening in a way that's really, it does. It just feels like things are cracking right now.
Yeah, it's magical.
So
it's
who's
magical.
On the show tonight?
On the show tonight, to talk about someone who actually did, had to face some adversity and he had to deal with a handful of these issues that we're talking about right now. Tom Kowalczyk, who is the director for the symphonic band of the Lakeside Pride organization. Many of you might know Lakeside Pride because they're in the Pride Parade every year.
Yep.
And they march and they do it, and that might be your only encounter with them.
And in the gay games, the gay bands was a really big part.
Huge thing. Tom had
a lot of band
Tom
geeks grew up to be great gay people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And maybe you're looking for that experience again. Maybe you're looking for that band geek experience again. And Lakeside Pride is definitely an organization for you. They have all these different facets of performing groups. Everybody's at every different level, from very advanced to very basic. Some people haven't picked up their horn in years and years and years, and yet they join the band and they find this great community. And if you love performing, it's a place to go. But Tom is here to talk with us today about his experience with the group, his finding the group in Chicago, and also they have a great concert coming up at the end of March. I highly encourage all of you to go out and see them. It's very easy to get to. It's very affordable. They have a great silent auction. They have all kinds of good stuff going on there. So we'll have more with Tom Kowalczyk later in this show. He's a great guy. He's a sweetie. And it was funny, him and his husband, who's actually not his husband, they're not married, but him and his partner, who's my boss at work, they came over and we inhaled an entire pan of lasagna before the interview.
Oh.
We ate the whole 13x9 pan of lasagna. I'm just saying.
How do I miss these interviews where there's a whole pan of lasagna inhaled? How do I miss those interviews?
We had that. And then we sat down and we had just a wonderful conversation. He was so giving and he shared just a lot about his life with us. So yeah. I'm so happy to be able to bring that to you guys. He's a good friend of mine, but also he's got a really great story and he's got some really great things going on in Chicago with the Lakeside.
When it can get you excited, even if you don't live in the Chicago area, that there are definitely, what I realized from the gay games is that these groups are in every major city at least.
Yeah, truly.
And that's pretty, pretty cool if you're listening to us in another region that, you know, you can go out and just get excited with the band fever again.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're celebrating, I believe, their 10th year now
that's
of
very
existence.
Cool.
So that's just, it just
God, I remember having them on Lesbi Gay, so they've been around for quite a while.
Yes, absolutely. So Tom will be with us later. Plus, we've got some Logan, we've got Jerry Potter, and what I'm going to start calling High Definition Podcast, because he now sounds delightful.
He sounds good. The Potter's Picks has now gotten on par with all
it's
of us.
It's graduated. It's not
the
in
Potter's
grammar school.
Potter's Picks is on par.
Potter's Picks, the alliteration.
Performance par.
The alliteration.
Performance par with the rest of the podcast. And we also have news. The news continues to just, you know, we are in the news, folks. That's what I'm talking about. It's cracking. It's cracking open. We're kind of all over it. So all that and more after this.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked. Chicago's newest smash hit musical and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular, I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked. Sponsored by Chase.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry, GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny, too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of March 5th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The Chicago Tribune says it's intriguing, tantalizing, lush, and gorgeous. Hubbard Street Dance Chicago presents two separate programs featuring exhilarating new works by leading American and international choreographers, running April 11th through the 22nd at the Harris Theater. Call 866-535-HSDC or visit hubbardstreetdance.com.
Germany 1722. Seven musicians apply for the prestigious post of the organist at the Thomaskirche. Insecurities, shortfalls of talent, and wildly clashing ideologies collide, creating complications in a wild and witty exploration of music, ambition, and art. Don't miss Bach at Leipzig at Writers' Theater. This vibrant play draws its inspiration from history while taking much delight in its fictional flights of fancy. For more on Bach at Leipzig, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company concludes its 10th year of Think Theater with Mrs. Warren's Profession by George Bernard Shaw. Censored for 8 years for airing Polite Society's Dirty Laundry, this controversial comedy full of wit and colorful characters remains as relevant today as when it was written. Mrs. Warren's Profession runs March 7th through April 22nd at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. For tickets, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Wicked, the most popular musical in Chicago history. For tickets, visit wickedthemusical.com/Chicago.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jerry Potter's Picks. Baby Spice has a new CD of 60s covers called Life in Mono. That's Emma Button, emmabuttonofficial.com. She reminds me kind of Olivia Newton-John, and I really enjoy her 60s covers. We also have a stand-up, Kathy Griffin, coming the 23rd and 24th at the LaSalle Bank Theater. That's 18 West Monroe at 8 o'clock p.m. Go to Ticketmaster.com to check out times and dates for other performances outside of the Chicago area. Keep listening to Jerry Potter's Picks and here on Windy City Queercast.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News. A military jury has sentenced Air Force Captain Devery L. Taylor to 50 years in prison for the rapes of four men and the attempted rapes of two others. Taylor was found guilty on all charges for drugging and kidnapping military personnel he met in bars. Taylor, who was dismissed from the Air Force, will not be eligible for parole for 20 years.
Governor Mitt Romney went on the offensive against Republican presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani as being pro-gay marriage since he signed a 1997 bill creating domestic partnership benefits in New York City. He is pro-choice, he is pro-gay marriage, and anti-gun, Romney said. That's a tough combination in a Republican primary.
The First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston will hear a constitutional challenge to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The case comes as Congress considers removing the policy. 12 lesbian and gay veterans, represented by SLDN, are suing the government and seeking military reinstatement.
In Largo, Florida, the city commission voted 5-2 to fire city manager Steve Stanton, who announced his plans to change his gender. The 48-year-old married man and father of a teenage boy can appeal his dismissal from his $140,000 a year job, and the commission must vote again to formally fire him. During the commission's meeting, Nadine Smith, executive director director of Equality Florida, was arrested.
In Utah, Kathy Worthington, a well-known community activist, died of an apparent suicide the day after a one-year anniversary of the death of her partner, Sarah Hamblin. Worthington came out in 1989 and was an advocate for women's rights as well as breast cancer awareness.
Tony Brennan, a University of Massachusetts student, has been arrested for beating another student and verbally assaulting him with anti-gay slurs. The assault was near the school's Crampton House, which houses the Stonewall Center, an LGBT group.
Finalists for the 19th annual Lambda Literary Awards have been announced. The winners in 25 categories will be announced on May 31st at the Lambda Literary Awards ceremony in New York City. Nominees include The Testosterone Files by Malx Wolf Valerio and Fun Home by Alison Bechtel.
The Rockway Institute, a think tank funded by the Gill Foundation, is uniting scientists and professionals to counter anti-gay opinions and attitudes. According to the website, rockway.alliant.edu, quote, a primary goal is to convey accurate scientific and professional information about LGBT issues to the media, legislatures, and the courts.
Steel Magnolias co-stars Shirley MacLaine and Olympia Dukakis may work together in a dark comedy called Poor Things. The fact-based story centers around two female con artists who befriend and murder homeless men to collect their life insurance policies. Ash Baron Cohen, a cousin of Borat star Sacha Baron Cohen, will direct.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Many folks know them as the band that marches each year in the Pride Parade, but each year they do much more than just walk down Halston and Broadway. Lakeside Pride is a musical organization committed to the education of the public at large about the diverse aspects of the metropolitan Chicago lesbian and gay community through musical performance, workshops, and non-musical events. We are very fortunate to have Tom Kowalczyk with us today, who has served as the director of the Lakeside Pride Symphonic Band since 2000. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
How are you doing today?
I am quite well.
Quite well. We just—I have to tell everybody—we just stuffed ourselves with a fun little meal, so we're quite full and a little loopy on wine, I think.
It was delicious. Thank you, Peter.
You're very welcome. So, you are a native, sir, of Michigan. Tell us how you first came to Chicago. How did you get here?
Oh, do you want the horrible story, or
sure.
Do you want the lie or the truth?
Oh, maybe a little from column A, a little from column B. What brought you to Chicago?
What brought me to Chicago was I had what I thought was a wonderful teaching job in Michigan until they found out about the lifestyle, and then
really?
I was asked to leave.
Oh, interesting.
And partway through the school year, so it's not like a teacher can find a job that readily, and my family wasn't too keen on me just staying around in an area that was going to have issues with it. So we found the next closest city that had ordinances and certain protections for gays and lesbians and didn't have, a little more open-minded folks. So we investigated this city and a few others, and I chose it to come to Chicago because it was still a little close to my family, but far enough for a little bit of freedom.
Wow, awesome. So the big gay Mecca really drew you in, not because it was a big gay Mecca, but because it was a liberal Mecca.
Liberal, and it has an outstanding arts community, both visual, performing. I mean, the Chicago Symphony was a huge draw for me then, and knowing a lot of the school systems out in the burbs had a still strong fine arts programs and were cutting them left and right like most of them were at that time period. Mm-hmm. It was kind of nice to have a place to come where they still appreciated the arts and symphonic bands and the culture of good classical music as well as, fun show tunes as well. So
good times, all colors of the rainbow, of the rainbow here.
Definitely.
So how did you get started in music then?
Oh gosh, I started, I came home one day in sixth grade and said, I want to be in band. And my dad thought it was a fad, didn't think it would go anywhere. And next thing you know, hi, I want to go off to school and be a music major.
Wow.
Which, at first my dad wasn't very keen on because he thought, nope, you're going to follow my footsteps. You have one choice. You can be a doctor or, well, you get a second choice, maybe a lawyer. So meanwhile, being a full-time music major, I still had to take tons of biology and chemistry classes.
Wow.
So it was quite a chore the first couple of years. And it wasn't until my junior recital when my dad finally realized, wow, the kid can actually do it. And fully backed it, and it's the only thing I've ever wanted to really do and love doing. I couldn't imagine really doing much of anything else.
So what did you start with? Did you start with the piano? Did you start with
No, I actually started
horn?
On trumpet. I learned trumpet. I learned a few other instruments. Going to Catholic school, we learned like the auto harp and a few other things and like some basic piano and things. When I got into high school, my band director got me hooked up with some beginner students, and I started teaching private lessons when I was a sophomore in high school.
That's awesome. Trumpet lessons?
Yeah,
or?
Trumpet lessons, wow. For some beginners, two of which are still playing today.
Nice.
One of my horn students from way back when is playing in one of the Navy bands.
Wow.
Even as we speak now. I have several of my students that are even for band directors now out in the world from way back when.
So look at you influencing people left and right. So you got to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You knew you were in music and you came here to pursue music even further. How did you get hooked up with the Lakeside Pride group?
After I got to Chicago, obviously not leaving Michigan under the greatest of terms, it was very difficult to get another teaching job. Mm-hmm. When I finally did get one 2 years later, it lasted about 2 years until they found out, and the new superintendent said, sorry, you're too much of a risk, you must go.
Oh.
I didn't have tenure, so after the second time of losing my job because of the lifestyle, I became quite frustrated with it and decided I packed up all my music and my instruments and put them in storage. Tried the business world and kind of stuck it out for, oh gosh, about 5 years. And in very early 2000, I think it was the very first Gay Chicago issue of January 2000, I noticed the ad in the back, community band, gay and lesbian, looking for a director. So I called and here we are.
Awesome. Awesome. So in 2000, what was the group like then? We'll dive in a little bit. We'll dive into how the group works now and what it looks like, because I'm sure it's diversified a lot since then.
Oh,
but
yeah.
At that time, who did you meet? How did you, what did you come into? What was the group like? How big were they?
At that time, I think the group had, if I remember correctly, maybe about 40 playing members. Very rusty players too. I kind of do this part-time for a living. That's was one of the mantras of the group, to be able to be open to all levels of players. Mm-hmm. And they were still trying to get things rolling, because as you know, being a non-for-profit in the city, trying to find a place that you can rehearse and mm-hmm. all those kind of overhead was a bit of a struggle. So we had, you know, probably 40 musicians. It was a little rough playing the first year, because you know, people, after you don't play your horn for 20, 30 years, you can get a little rusty.
Sure.
So over the years, it's grown. This upcoming concert, I believe we will have 73 people on stage.
Wow. And 100% volunteer.
Oh, totally volunteer. Every level, people who help out with board positions, such as our treasurer, the guy that helps with the marketing PR, the directors, all the players, we're all volunteer top to bottom. These folks give up a lot of their time. And they're very, very dedicated. We have people that drive almost 2 hours one way.
Wow.
To come to rehearsal on Sunday evenings to rehearse with the concert band, the symphonic band, I should say. We used to be called the concert band. We decided since we got so large, we better keep up with the actual term mm-hmm. of the ensemble. So we did that about 3 years ago, I believe. The playing level of the group, as you can imagine, those people that were playing then, each year, they've progressively gotten better. We've attracted other people, such as like master's students from DePaul.
Wow.
Over the years, we've had players who were semi-pros who gigged around the city who mm-hmm. joined us. We even had a member who was a substitute for the CSO. So we've had all levels, and people work together really well. We divide up parts and share the, you know, majority of the responsibility of the parts, so that it's not one person playing the lead all the time. Mm-hmm. And they share it and share all the responsibilities of running the organization too, what it takes to advertise the concerts, to help me get music. And I've got a person who volunteers to help distribute the music. So that's one less awesome thing that I have to mess with. And, it's a wonderful group of very dedicated people.
So you've touched on early on, you touched on just a couple of different facets. You mentioned sort of symphonic band, and then there were different ensembles. Tell us a little bit about, you know, it's more than just a symphonic band. What are some of the other groups in the organization? And I hear there's something about color guards too. And...
Oh yes, we have, it's very diverse. It really is. I'll back up even farther. We kept saying that's a gay and lesbian group, but we have everything. GLBT, straight. In fact, one of the people that helps with the marketing is a straight gentleman who's worked in the business world for years and just loves playing his trumpet. So he joined the band. We've got another woman with who handles her little baby at home and does our newsletter every week to keep our members posted on what's going on. So we have you know, the whole gambit. And as far as your ensembles in the organization, we have several. If you want to have, like, say, we've got a saxophone ensemble that covers the saxophone family, soprano, alto, tenor, barry sax. We've also got a clarinet choir, brass septet, a jazz ensemble, the marching band, which you mentioned. And now in the last year, we have a color guard that's been quite active. They'll actually be at, what is it, the Museum of Modern Art downtown in a few weeks.
Wow. So all these great people coming together, doing it. Now, as I mentioned, it's all volunteer work, and you know, you expanded on that, how radically diverse, and these people are very dedicated to it. What do you think they get out of it? Why are they so addicted to it? What is it?
I would like to think that it really does something for their soul. Hmm. It really does. Because I mean, if you really love music, at least the way I do, I mean, I couldn't imagine living without it. It can take a really rough day at work or a rough week at work, and you can get together Sunday evening and we share these great musical moments, and you walk out with this fresh new feeling on life every week. And it's just a joy. It really is. It really truly is a joy to have this ability to be able to play and perform one of the true human expressions left.
Mm. Why do you think it's important to identify this as primarily a gay and lesbian? Is it necessary? Is it something that we need? Do you think it, what does it do for the community? Our community, I should say.
Well, I think, like a lot of, like in the sports world, there's people who wait till they're out of the professional league and then they come out of the closet. What good does that do for the gay and lesbian community when everybody hides in the closet? I mean, we are here. Yes, we probably could have picked up a few more gigs over the years had we not had Lakeside Pride in the title. But we chose to stick to it because this is who we are, and we're proud of who we are. And people have realized over the years that we are still quite diverse. We play quite well, play very passionately, and they should just see, you know, they're really not much different than anybody else.
Excellent. So with that said, you've got a couple of things coming up. This is going to be a busy year for you. As I understand it, this is somewhat of an anniversary year as well.
Yes, it is. 10 years
anniversary. So I believe there'll be a lot of things going on in June. I was reading. There's a lot of stuff. Folks, I'm gonna put this on the show notes and we're going to repeat it again. But lakesidepride.org is where you can find out just a whole ton of information about what's coming up, what kind of events. You can see photos from different events. You can even hear a little bit of stuff. You can read about things. If you're interested in joining, if you want to sign up, there's a way to get on the mailing list, and there's contact information there. But right around the corner, you guys have a big show coming up.
Yes, we do.
Tell us a little bit about what this show is.
This show, we do themed concerts so that we package a, have some kind of continuing theme through all the music. This time around, it is art in music. Mm. One of our biggest pieces on the program will be Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky, which most people are probably quite familiar with. The music's been used in a lot of movies, even commercials and things. And what it is it's a piece of several movements put together by Mussorgsky for to represent music for this art exhibition. One of his friends, Victor Hartmann, had passed away suddenly when actually at a young age, and he decided that he would write this music to go along with the art opening.
Wow.
So through the piece, it's supposed to represent you walking through the various galleries and seeing the different types of artwork. For example, they have the several promenade themes, which are just to represent you walking from one gallery to the next. One of the movements is based on gnomes, where it's very mysteriously written, just to base on the paintings that he made of some particular gnomes. Another one would be the old castle and the old history of dark, danky, crispy, you know, creepy castle kind of thing. And there's also one that represents a ox cart that travels across the city square. So it's just this large buildup and then let release of this big musical energy. One of them represents the catacombs, which again is pretty dark and mysterious. Another one, a big bustling French marketplace. So he does a great job at doing this. This is actually scored. Originally, he wrote it for four hands on piano. But Mussorgsky died before he had a chance to do much orchestral scoring. Mm. So Maurice Ravel came along and scored it for orchestra back in 1929. And since then, it's been played. It's a standard on most orchestral programs in the years. I think CSO just did it a few years ago. This arrangement that we are doing actually is a direct transcription. So it is not watered down. The parts haven't been made easier for musicians.
You go, boy.
that tells you the level of players that we have here in our organization. It's great. They are note for note, same key as the orchestral version that the professionals out there play. And our group is doing quite a great job of working them up.
Awesome. So we've got continuing with the theme in art. Tell us a little bit more about what's in the program.
Oh, we've got a good old fashioned Verdi overture from La Forza del Destino, which represents, you know, the good and the forces of destiny and opera and the big dramatic arias. And of course, when the famed heroine dies, and very dramatic music there. And we've also got, you know, some lighter things like an Irish reel to represent the art form of dance. We'll be opening with a very short fanfare from a French ballet called La Paris, but the ballet unfortunately has fallen by the wayside, but the fanfare has lasted all these years, and it's quite brilliant. It's from 1940s French music. And then we'll also be doing, you know, hitting the Broadway tunes, because of course we want to make sure our program's pretty diverse, and that Broadway number includes things from Titanic, Beauty and the Beast, Season of Love from Rent, so it's quite a mixed program of things that people will be able to hear that evening.
And when is it happening?
It will be Saturday, March 31st at Northside College Prep High School, which is 5501 North Kedzie, which is basically the corner of Kedzie and Bryn Mawr. Mm-hmm. Very nice auditorium, beautiful space. It's been a wonderful school for us to play at. They've been very helpful and welcoming to us. We've been playing there now. I believe this is our fourth year. They have a wonderful staff that's very welcoming, and we've had very wonderful audiences, and so it'd be wonderful to share our music with even more.
Absolutely. And there's not just a concert happening that evening. There's all kinds of goods and toys and baubles stuff for adults littering the lobby, literally littering the lobby. I remember one of the first shows I went there, I was drooling even before I heard all the music. I was like, there's all this good stuff here. Tell us a little bit about the silent auction.
We actually, since it's art, we decided to have an MC who is an artist, and he will be Eric Sosa.
Oh, yes.
Who actually, to help out with the auction that we are doing to help raise funds. As I mentioned, the overhead for us is pretty high. He's donating some artwork. So we've got various artwork as well as things donated for this auction that we'll have, a silent auction that you can place bids on before the concert and during the intermission. And it will be fun for the audience as well as help raise funds for our organization.
Excellent. So it's not it literally is an evening of music and art. It's right there. It's right in your face. How do people get tickets?
They can either go online to our website, www.lakesidepride.org, and pay with PayPal, or they can get their tickets at the night of the event at the box office right there at the auditorium at Northside College Prep.
Excellent. And if you are driving, there's a huge parking lot. It's very easy to park there. It's a beautiful facility. It's very accessible. Even if you're coming into the city from another place, highly recommend that people check it out. Tom, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Peter.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
the best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.